We are continuing on this morning in the book of Joshua. We started a few weeks ago, and now we're going to be into our third message in the book of Joshua. We're not going to do the whole book. I think we're going to do a couple more weeks, and then we will kind of move on to something else. But we just, I felt that there were some real things for us here. You know, Joshua, as we've looked at, it's a transitional book. Moses had died, and Joshua has taken over the leadership of the children of Israel. They're on the eastern shores of the Jordan River. They're about to enter into the promised land that God had given to Abraham and his descendants, a land that Abraham's descendants had now not lived in for 470 years. That's a long time. Imagine that you're going back to your ancestors' land of 470 years prior, and you're going back now to see it. You know nothing of the land. You've never lived there. You've lived in slavery. The last 40 years, you've been part of wandering in the desert, and you've seen so many of the generation pass away. And now you are on the verge of entering into the land that God had given to Abraham and his descendants. And there they are. Talk about transition. And that's where we pick up the story this morning, from Joshua chapter 3 and verse 1. We read, "Early in the morning, Joshua and all the Israelites set out from Shittim and went to the Jordan, where they camped before crossing over. After 3 days, the officers went through the camp, giving orders to the people. When you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God, and the priests who are Levites carrying it, you are to move out from your positions and follow it. Then you'll know which way to go, since you have never been this way before. But keep a distance of about 1,000 yards between you and the ark. Do not go near it," Joshua told the people. "Consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do amazing things among you." Joshua said to the priest, "Take up the Ark of the Covenant and pass on ahead of the people." So they took it up and went ahead of them. And the Lord said to Joshua, "Today I will begin to exalt you in the eyes of all Israel, so they may know that I am with you as I was with Moses. Tell the priests who carry the Ark of the Covenant, when you reach the edge of the Jordan's waters, go and stand in the river." Joshua said to the Israelites, "Come here and listen to the words of the Lord your God. This is how you will know that the living God is among you, and that he will certainly drive out before you the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Hivites, the Perizzites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, the Jezebites." That's a whole lot of ites, isn't it? "See, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth will go into the Jordan ahead of you. Now then, choose 12 men from the tribes of Israel, one from each tribe. And as soon as the priests who carry the Ark of the Lord of all the earth, set foot in the Jordan, its waters flowing downstream will be cut off and stand up in a heap." And this is what happened. And I'm going to skip over all the details of the next little bit. The 12 men that had been chosen, one from each of the 12 tribes of Israel, they took a rock from the middle of the Jordan River that was now dried up, and they carried it to the other side of the river. And I'm picking up the story again in Joshua chapter 4 and verse 19, where we read, "On the 10th day of the first month, the people went up from the Jordan and camped at Gilgal on the eastern border of Jericho. And Joshua set up at Gilgal 12 stones they had taken out of the Jordan. And he said to the Israelites, 'In the future, when your descendants ask their fathers, what do these stones mean? Tell them, Israel crossed the Jordan on dry ground, for the Lord your God dried up the Jordan before you until you had crossed over. The Lord your God did to the Jordan just what he had done to the Red Sea when he dried it up before us until we had all crossed over. He did this so that all the people of the earth might know that the hand of the Lord is powerful, and so that you might always fear the Lord your God.'" And that's where I'm going to pause for now. You know, often The people of God live in spiritual poverty and are not enjoying all that God has for them. For the children of Israel, the journey from Egypt to Canaan should have taken a matter of a few weeks. If you were doing it by yourself or with a small party of people, you probably could have done it within 11 days. With the amount of people that they had, maybe couple million people, let's say it would take a little longer. It might have taken 4 weeks. They should have made that journey out of Egypt and into Canaan within a 1 month period of time. But because of unbelief and disobedience, they had failed to enter into all that God had for them. You know, so it is with us. So often we have not entered into all that God has for us because of unbelief and disobedience. And we're left wandering in a spiritual wilderness. 40 years the children of Israel stayed in the wilderness. And they have now finally come to the eastern border of Canaan. Moses has died. Joshua has become the people's leader. He had sent 2 spies into the land to check out the land, and particularly Jericho, the first city that they're going to come into contact with, to see what they found there. Joshua had actually been in there as the first spies Moses had sent in shortly after they had come out of Egypt. And there were 12 spies at that time. And they saw a wonderful land, a fruitful land, a land that was flowing, that said, the scriptures say, with milk and honey. It was a rich, productive land, but there were giants in the land. The people were big, they were enormous. The spies felt like grasshoppers in their sight. And because of fear, 10 out of the 12 said, "We can't do it. Those people are enormous. They will just stomp us out. We can't overtake them." And Joshua and Caleb, they said, no, God is with us. He's given us this land. He will fight the battle for us. We're going to go. And the 10 ruled over the 2. And that's why they wandered in the wilderness for 40 years. You know, out of that generation that came out of Egypt, all those that were 20 years of age and older, I believe it was, none of them went into Egypt except Joshua and Caleb. It was all the younger generation that God had raised up that went in. The 2 spies that went in that Joshua had sent in, they had taken refuge in a prostitute's home. We looked at that last time. That's a whole interesting story in itself. And this prostitute, Rahab, she said in Joshua chapter 2 and verse 9, she says, "I know that the Lord has given this land to you." She is the one that's saying, "The Lord has given this land to you." Not will give or might give, the Lord has given. And she says, "There's great fear that has fallen over us, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. We have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea." That was 40 years earlier. Those people had been living in fear for 40 years because of what God had done in delivering the children of Israel out of Egypt. And what did the children of Israel do? They had been living in fear because, "We can't do this. Do you know the size of those people? Oh, man." And then Rahab said, "We have heard how the Lord not only dried up the water of the Red Sea for when you came out of Egypt, what you did to Sihon and Og." They were 2 kings that their territories that the children of Israel had to go through to get to the Jordan River. They had just obliterated them a few weeks before. They had asked permission to go through these lands, and the king said, "No way." They mustered their army and they went after the Israelites, and the Israelites just destroyed them. God destroyed them. And Rahab says, "We saw what the 2 kings of the Amorites east of the Jordan, whom you'd completely destroyed. And when we heard of it, our hearts melted and everyone's courage failed because of you." And these 2 spies are hearing all this for the first time going, "Whoa, I didn't know that. And they go running back to Joshua, and Joshua, you never believe it. These people are there living in fear of what God's done. You know, as Rahab said, for the Lord your God is God in heaven above and on earth below. And from the last sermon, if you heard that, you'll know I kind of hammered away on that. God is not only the God of heaven above, he is the God on earth below. And the Israelites' problem was they knew that God was the God in heaven above. Yes, there's a God out there somewhere. He is out in heaven somewhere. There is a God out there. But they did not equally know that God was on the God of earth below. Yes, God was out there somewhere. But they did not know that God was God over their life, that God knows you, that God knows them. And they lived in spiritual poverty. Are you living in spiritual poverty today because you believe, well, there's a God out there somewhere, but he would never know me? You know, Hebrews chapter 3 and verse 19 tells us they were not able to enter the land of Canaan because of their unbelief. And I've got to ask myself the question, am I living in spiritual poverty because of my unbelief? How does that work? Well, God could never do a mighty work here in Cumberland. I mean, how long has it been that people have been working here and the church is small? Look at our ages of the people here and the young people that have moved in, and we're of two different worlds. Nothing could ever happen here. And is God hindered because of my unbelief or your unbelief? We want to be a people that believe and trust in our powerful God. He's not only the God in heaven above, he's the God on earth below. And God is about to show the Israelites that he is the God on earth below as well, as they're about to experience him in amazing ways. I've already shared with you how yesterday I believe we saw God work in amazing ways. God is the God of the earth below. It's one thing to believe there's a God out there, but it's another thing to know God experientially in your life every day, that he is the God on earth below, and he knows you, he loves you, and he cares for you. And he will supply your every need, not your every want, but your every need. And God's purpose was not to just bring the Israelites out of their slavery and bondage in Egypt, but to bring them into a land of provision and blessing where everything they needed would be made available to them. You know, this is such a beautiful picture of the Christian experience. God does not just bring us out of a life of bondage to sin, but he brings us into a life of provision and blessing where everything that we need is made available to us if we trust him and believe him. Now, to cross the Jordan River and come into Canaan, Israel needed to be prepared, obedient, and ready to follow God. Just as we need to be prepared, obedient, and ready ourselves to come into all that God has for us. And I'm going to highlight out of this scripture four areas of preparation there was here. And the first thing was there were instructions to obey. Verse 1, early in the morning, Joshua and all the Israelites set out from Shittim and went to the Jordan, where they camped before crossing over. They were to move from the encampment they had in Shittim and to move to the bank of the Jordan River. And then it says in verse 2, after 3 days, the officers went throughout the camp, giving orders to the people, telling them what to do. And they said, when you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God and the priests who are Levites carrying it, you are to move out from your positions and follow it. They were to follow the Ark of the Covenant. Now, just a few things about the Ark. We could spend many weeks just talking about the Ark of the Covenant. But just a few things to kind of refresh our memory. The Ark was, well, basically it was a box that Moses built. It was roughly 2 feet wide, 2 feet high, and 4 feet long. It was covered in gold. And on the top of the box were two cherubim, sitting on either end of the box, and their wings were outstretched and touching as they reached over the box and coming together. And God's presence came down and was present on the box right in what they called the mercy seat. And the Ark of the Covenant represented the presence of God with his people. And now this box, while the children of Israel were in the desert, they built the tabernacle. It was basically a tent, a place of worship. And in the tabernacle was this spot of the Holy of Holies. And in the Holy of Holies is where the Ark of the Covenant was, where God's presence was. Only the high priest could approach the Ark of the Covenant once a year on the Day of Atonement. First, he must make a sacrifice for his own sins. And after he'd done that, he needed to make an animal sacrifice for the people's sins. And the blood of the sacrificed animal was sprinkled on the ark as an offering for the people's sins. Now God says, follow the Ark of the Covenant, but don't get closer than 1,000 yards to the Ark. What was the reason for that? There were other occasions in the Old Testament where people approached the Ark when they were not supposed to or unauthorized to do so, and they were immediately struck dead. Because the Ark was only to be approached on the basis of the shed blood of a sacrifice on the Day of Atonement. If we do not approach God on his terms, on the basis of shed blood, we do not meet God as a friend, we meet him as a judge. And God himself was going to lead the people, and his presence was symbolized by the ark, but you must follow his instructions or you'll get yourself in deep trouble. Don't think we can just come nilly-willy to God and tell him whatever we think, whatever we want, and he's just going to be good with that. We must follow what God says, and if we do it our way and not God's way, we're in trouble. Right to this very day. Secondly, there is psychological preparation. So it wasn't just preparation of things to obey. There was a psychological preparation in verse 4. Then you'll know which way to go since you've never been this way before. Oh boy, isn't that so true in life? Over this last little while, as I look at you, so many of you have gone through things and you've never been this way before. And so many are in the midst of things and you've never been this way before. And God, what do we do? And where do we go? And how do we handle this? We've never been this way before. And there's going to be trials along the way. There are going to be things that will take you to the brink of your endurance and to the brink of your strength and patience and courage. But keep your eye on the ark and follow it no matter where it goes, was the message to the people. You know, when Jesus called the disciples, the 12 disciples, and we have a record of what Jesus, how he called 6 out of the 12. There's 6, we have no idea what he said to them. And there's 6 that we do know. They were Peter and Andrew and James and John and Philip and Matthew. And Jesus said the same 2 words to each of those 6 men. And he said, follow me. Follow me. And it's interesting, Jesus never tells them where they're going. Nor does anyone ask, where are we going? It was just, follow me. The issue is not where you're going, it's who you are going with. And as you face things in life, the issue is not what is before you, it's who you are going with through this issue. And Jesus says, follow me. Because whatever you face in life, God is sufficient to deal with the issue at hand. Just imagine if one of the disciples, let's say James, said, whoa, Jesus, hold up, where are we going? I'm not going to follow you till I know where you're going. And Jesus, I'm just going to say, let's say Jesus said, well, James, let me tell you. In a very short period of time, I'm going to be crucified. And you fellas are going to take the message of the gospel into the whole world. And you're going to see amazing things happen. And you can imagine James going, whoa, I didn't expect that. What's going to happen? And what all are we going to do? And James, I need to tell you, because of the message that you are going to preach, Herod is not going to like it. And there's going to be a book written by the name of Acts. And not too far into the book of Acts, Herod is going to have your head chopped off. I wonder how James would have felt about that. The thing is, follow the Lord God. John, I wonder if John would have said, hey, hold it, where are we going? I want to know where we're going. Well, John, you're actually going to live to be a ripe old age. You're going to be the only one of my followers that dies the natural death of old age. Everyone else is going to be martyred. You might think, John, oh, that's pretty good. I'm going to live to be an old man. You're going to be exiled to the island of Patmos. You're going to be alone. You're going to be lonely. You're going to have many strange dreams and visions, things you do not understand, things that are beyond your comprehension that are going to be revealed to you, and you're going to write about them and write them down, and people are going to think you've gone plumb out of your mind and you're crazy. That's where you're going, John. I wonder if Peter said, hey, I want to know where we're going. And if Jesus would say to Peter, well, Peter, you're so outspoken. You're going to see amazing things happen. You're going to see people healed. You're going to see the message go forth of the gospel in amazing ways. But Peter, you're going to be crucified like I was, except you are going to be crucified upside down. I wonder what those guys would have thought. You see, we do not know what the future holds for us. But we know who holds the future, and he is sufficient. Hallelujah, yes. Know that. Even though we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, we don't know what's going to happen today, but we know who holds today, and he is sufficient. Thirdly, there was spiritual preparation. Verse 5, Joshua told the people, consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do amazing things among you. You know, consecrate means to purify, to sanctify yourself, to set yourself apart for God. Why? Because he is going to do great things among you. Oh, not me. I mean, I haven't been educated and I haven't done this. God is the God of the earth, and through you, he can do amazing things. Things as you set yourself apart for him. You know, you might have thought for the children of Israel, the first thing of importance would have been once they crossed the Jordan River, and now they're setting up camp on the other side in Gilgal, and they're setting up all the stones that they'd taken out of the middle of the river. You might have thought that the first issue of importance would have been, get your weapons ready. We're getting ready to go to Jericho. Get your sword sharpened. Get your shields prepared. But no, the preparation was spiritual before anything else. It's God who's going to do the great things among you. You are to be in utter dependence upon God, for apart from God, you and me can do nothing of any significance or importance at all. You're to follow God. Not your own ideas, your own plans, your own wants, your own desires. You are to seek God and his will and follow him and abide in him. And the fourth thing is remember what God has done. We so quickly forget what God has done and we start to grumble. We start to complain. We start to worry about what's going to happen tomorrow. Take note and remember what God has done and talk about it with your family and friends and those around you. As it says in verse 6, in the future when your children ask you, what do these stones mean? You tell them the story. In verse 21, he said to the Israelites, in the future when your descendants ask their fathers, what do these stones mean? You tell them the story. I started off telling you the story of my wedding yesterday because all of a sudden I'm thinking, that's something that God's done. And I've seen the hand of God doing an amazing thing right here yesterday. And I told you the story so that we won't forget that God is the God of the earth below, not of just God of heaven above. We're not to just follow God out of the old life, but we're to follow him into the new life and tell people all that we've seen God do in our lives. Remember.